It's not her.
I think they're having a mic problem, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, she's
I'm
going
gonna
to
stay in
change
my
out her
office.
system.
I think she spoke. She
Can you
said,
hear me?
I can hear
Yes,
you.
we can.
Yeah, they're having problems with the microphones in there. My apologies.
No
Okay,
problem.
we ready?
Yes, I read the opening statement. Could you please
Yep.
call the
Oh, I heard you. I
roll?
heard you. Mayor Waller.
Present.
Councilwoman Cahill.
Here.
Ms. Corcoran.
Sir.
Reverend Kenny. He's in here. He's
We
in the other
see
room
him. I
with the
can see him on
microphone.
the screen.
Yep. Mr. Atkins.
Here.
Mr. Foster. Yeah. Mr.
I see
Ahmed.
Mr.
And Madam Chair.
Here. Would we can we all recite the Pledge of Allegiance? Flag is over my shoulder. I pledge allegiance to
To
the
the flag
flag of
of
the
the
United
United
States of
States of
America
America
and to
and
the
to the
Republic
Republic for
for which
which
it
it
stands,
stands,
one
one
nation
nation under
under
God,
God, indivisible,
indivisible, with
with
liberty
liberty
and
and
justice
justice
for
for all.
all. Mr. Barlow, is he here? Can you read
James
the open
Keeley
public?
is standing in for Mr. Barlow tonight.
Okay, can you read the open public meeting notice, please?
I do not have the open public meetings notice. No one gave it to me,
Yes.
Ms.
I emailed you, Madam Chair, and asked you if he wasn't going to do that tonight on my last email.
Okay. Well,
We could go to numbers. Any announcements for changing number six?
okay.
The Amneal Pharmaceutical application for this evening will not be heard. It is adjourned until December 13th. The applicant must notice and publish. Those are all the changes I'm aware of.
Okay, fine, thank you. Can I get a motion to pay the audited bills?
Recording stopped.
I heard the recording stop.
Recording in
Yeah, I
progress.
just
There we
put it
go.
back.
Okay,
I'm
start
recording
it
it
up
all.
again.
We're fine. You guys
It's
keep
back
going. Got
again.
it.
Can I get a motion from the board to pay the duly audited bills?
Madam Chair, Dawn Corcoran, I make that motion.
I'll second that, Councilwoman Cahill.
Thank you. Roll
Mayor
call,
Waller?
please.
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny? Yep, I heard him in there. Mr. Atkins? And
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Item number eight, adoption of resolution to memorialize action taken on October the 11th, 2023.
From there.
Should I set him up on my computer?
Okay, Carol's not here. Somebody has to adopt the resolution, please.
Madam Chair,
Go ahead, Ms.
Thornburg, and I can do that for you. I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the resolution for application number 23PV22 JSM at Centennial Piscataway LLC, Block 6703, Lot 8, 88 Centennial Avenue. Minor
Do I have a
subject.
second? Roll call.
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny? Yes. Mr. Atkins?
I heard a yes.
And Madam
Yes.
Chair?
Yes. Yes. Item number nine, adoption of the minutes from the regular meeting of October the 11th, 2023. Ms. Cochran?
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the minutes.
I have a second.
Mr. Atkins, second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny? Mr. Atkins?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Item number 10, 23PB25, IDIL 1551 South Washington, LLC, preliminary and final site plan. Mr. Paul Conciatori.
Thank you. That's great. That's exactly how you say it. Thank you very much, and good evening, everyone. My name is Paul Conciatori. I'm an attorney at Price, Meese, Shulman, and Dominio, representing the applicant, IDIL 1551 South Washington LLC. The applicant is the fee owner of the property. Property, to no surprise, is 1551 South Washington Avenue.
Surprise.
No surprise. This application this evening is for, there currently is an office building located, a vacant office building located on the property. This application proposes the demolition of that structure and the replacement with a 155,272 square foot warehouse building. I would also note, just for the record, that there currently is T-Mobile cellular communication antennas on the roof of the existing office building. The plan is, as you will hear, that those antennas will be removed, placed on a temporary structure on the property while the building is demolished and the new building built, and then replaced back on the rooftop of the new warehouse building. The Piscataway Zoning Board of Adjustment has already granted approval for that temporary structure to be located while the construction occurs. And in the very near future, I believe the next couple of weeks, they will be filing, T-Mobile will be filing a new application for approval for placement on the roof. In this application, we will be talking about screening and such, so you will have an opportunity to hear about that. But I just wanted to note it for the record. The applications for preliminary and final site plan approval. The uses and the plan itself is in full compliance with the redevelopment plan. There are no deviations of any kind. There are two minor site plan design waivers for lighting, as you'll hear, in two discrete areas at the property line, both of them right near the DOT right-of-way. And in both instances, the slight exceedance is to provide additional lighting for safety reasons for pedestrians to access, as you'll hear. Crosswalk, there's a set of stairs for a new sidewalk to be constructed to connect to the 287 overpass. And then in another location, similarly, there's a crosswalk and sidewalk that it made sense to provide a little extra lighting. Other than those two design waivers, there is nothing. The plan is exactly in compliance. I have four witnesses this evening. Rob Fisher, who's vice president and co-head of development for the applicant IDIL, will be testifying. Also have Alex LeMay, who is the from Bowler. He is the project civil engineer. Dan McGinnis of Bowman is the traffic engineer. And lastly, Claudio Brita is from Ware Malcolm, who is the project architect. So that's kind of the lineup. Unless there's any questions, we can swear in the first witness and I can get started.
You may proceed with your first witness.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Fisher, Rob, are you present?
Yes, he is present.
Unfortunately, I'm not the other Alex LeMay. I'm Rob.
Right. For some reason, his box seems to say Alex LeMay, but it is Rob Fisher.
Mr. Fisher, okay. Can you raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
I do.
Your name and address, please.
Yeah, Robert Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R, 3586 Northwood, one word, Drive, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And Mr. Fisher, if you can, to start, just provide the board with your title, your involvement with the applicant, and your familiarity with this project, the plan, and this property.
Yeah. This is Rob Fisher. I'm the vice president, co-head of development for IDI. I handle development and construction for New Jersey, so I'll actually be in charge of building the new building. I've been with IDI actually since I'm the only original member. I've been here 34 years and I've built numerous buildings all over this country, but predominantly in Memphis, Nashville, and New Jersey.
And I would assume, just for the record, that you're intimately aware of all aspects of this property and this application.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. I was part of sourcing the land and have worked on it ever since the beginning.
And just for a little background briefly, IDI Logistics, perhaps you can, I know what the exact applicant entity is IDIL 1551 South Washington LLC, but it is IDI Logistics. Perhaps you can give the board just a sense of who that company is.
Absolutely. IDI Logistics has been around in different forms for 34 years. Like I said, I've been there the whole time. They're headquartered out of Atlanta. We've developed about 190 million square feet over that time of light industrial logistics centers. We have about 4 million feet currently in New Jersey, and I've done 8 projects in New Jersey.
Great. And can you give the board just a general idea of what is proposed in this application?
Yeah, this is a speculative warehouse. It's 155,272 feet. The general idea is speculative. We don't know who would take it. We don't have a tenant at this time. But generally speaking, it will be either one or probably at the most 2 tenants typically.
Great.
Could you speak a little louder? I didn't hear your last comment. It'll be generally 2 what?
The last comment, it is one single tenant, but sometimes it could be subdivided for 2 at the most.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And just kind of to clarify that point, Mr. Fisher, I would say it, obviously your preference, I would assume, and please correct me and confirm for the record, your preference would be for 2 tenants, but I know, have you designed this building to accommodate 2, I guess, is how
yeah, my, our preference would always be one single tenant for the building, yes, sir. And typically a building of this size, that's the way it trends.
Okay. Would you ever anticipate there being more than 2 tenants?
I cannot see that happening. It's possible, I guess, but I highly doubt it. We haven't designed it for subdivision that way.
And you heard in my opening remarks, commenting on the existing telecommunications antennas that are located on the roof. If you can, just to confirm for the record, briefly describe the process that we'll be undergoing in terms of those antennas.
Yeah, the antennas, once we have all the approvals in place, which I think we do now, will be removed from the building. It will be placed on a temporary basis on a cow, a cell on wheels, basically. And then once the building is erected, it'll be reconstructed on top of the building. So there'll be no interruption of service. So y'all's telephones will still work.
Great. Thank you. I know in one of the reports, I believe it was the planning review, there was mention made of environmental remediation. I know there was a very small item for a historic hydraulic lift that might have had a spill to it. Can you just describe, I believe that's done, but can you just describe and provide some detail for the record?
Yeah, during our our due diligence of the property, we did discover through the previous owner that there was a small hydraulic leak. We investigated, we removed all the soils. We determined it had not infiltrated the groundwater. And the LSRP, Rebecca Hollander of PRC, is preparing the final reports to submit to NJDEP so she can issue our RAO.
Because there's a couple of technical terms, let me just make sure for the record it's clear. All of the contaminated soil has been removed and disposed of off-site, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. And the sampling has been done to confirm there is no groundwater impact in any way.
That is correct also.
And as you just described, the report, the LSRP is preparing a report to file with the DEP, and that will close the matter?
Yes.
And do you have a general concept of how long that would take?
I would imagine 60 to 90 days, typically. Okay.
Thank you. Now, can you confirm, and there was a question about solar ready, can you confirm for the record the expectation, intention as to solar ready, the rooftop solar?
Yeah, I mean, in general, IDI Logistics is known as a high-end developer of this type of product. We take the higher end. We also try and minimize our impact so that at this time, the building is currently designed for the roof load for solar over 100% of the building. And it is our intent to not have it solar ready, but to install a solar system to match the final needs of the tenant that's selected.
Okay. And so again, just to kind of make it clear, I know there was a question on, I believe, the planner's report about solar ready and it being clear from the plans to, and I know that entails a certain additional weighting load for the roof. Right. You're confirming for the record that solar ready roof would encompass 100% of the roof.
That is correct.
Okay. And I know we'll hear in the architect testimony, but there will be a note added to the architectural plans to reflect.
That is correct, yes.
Lastly, can you provide some detail on IDI's view on LEED. Will this be a LEED certified building? What, you know, a little, yes. A little background on that.
All our buildings are LEED certified at this time, yes. I want to try and make it gold, but we just go for the highest achievable that we can get.
Very good. Those are all the questions I have for this witness.
Members of the board, do you have any questions of Mr. Fisher? Hearing no questions from the board, can we open that up to the public? Ms. Buckley, do you see any hands?
No, Madam Chair.
Close to the public. Okay, you can call your next witness.
Okay. Alex LeMay.
Mr. LeMay, are you present?
Present.
Could you raise your right hand?
Yes.
Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
I do.
Your name and address, please.
My name is Alexander LeMay. That's L-O-M as in Mary, E-I. Address is 30 Independence Boulevard, Suite 200 in Warren, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Mr. LeMay, I know you are an engineer at Uller. Can you very briefly provide your background so that I can qualify you as a civil engineer and noting testimony, et cetera, in the past?
Sure. Graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineering from the University of Delaware. I've been licensed in the state of New Jersey since 2016 and been working with Bowler in the field of civil engineering for over 12 years.
And obviously you are familiar in preparing these plans and to provide this testimony.
I am.
I would ask that he be qualified in civil engineering to provide the project engineering testimony.
Have you testified in Piscataway or Middlesex County before, Mr. LeMay?
I have not testified in Piscataway, but I have been in Middlesex County, Carteret, Perth Amboy, and Hillsborough.
Thank you. He's qualified to testify as an engineer.
Thank you. Mr. LeMay, I think probably easiest to have you kind of run through things, I would ask you to provide the board with a summary of the plan, what is proposed, highlighting the relevant areas. Obviously, I can stop and add some questions as needed. And then making comments to the relevant reports as you deem necessary during that, and then we can close up any loopholes or anything we missed at the end. So please provide the board kind of a summary of your service.
Sure. I'd like to start with the existing conditions. I'll bring up an exhibit prepared by our office. So what you'll see on screen now is the is the aerial exhibit prepared by Bowler, dated November 8th, 2023. And I'd like to mark this as Exhibit A1, with north being to the top of the page. The site is identified. Site is identified on the tax map as Block 5301, Lot 1404, or 1551 South Washington Avenue. The surrounding area, we have South Washington Avenue and an access ramp along the frontage to the west of the site, with some industrial beyond. There's retail, industrial, and self-storage to the north of the site, self-storage and residential to the east, and with I-287 to the south and commercial beyond. The site is approximately 10.02 acres. It is situated in the 1551 South Washington Avenue redevelopment area, where a warehouse is a permitted use. Currently on the site, I know Mr. Conchatori had mentioned it, there's an existing office building that is plus or minus 49,616 square feet. And in the existing condition, there is one access point from Washington Plaza Drive, which is accessed via South Washington Avenue at a signalized intersection. So with that, I'd like to move on to the proposed conditions. I'm just going to bring up another exhibit. This exhibit is a colorized version of our site plan that was submitted with the application. This exhibit was prepared by Bowler as well, also dated November 8th, 2023, conveniently. And I'd like to mark this as Exhibit A2, noting that north is still to the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
And I will zoom in a little bit, just you know, with the virtual presentation, I'd like to kind of get a good view of the building and the surrounding site plan. The proposed development proposes 155,272 square foot warehouse with associated loading docks, driveways, car parking spaces, as well as stormwater and utility infrastructure. The building is oriented in such a way that the truck docks and the loading are facing west towards South Washington Avenue. During early design and concept plans for the project, we had a more We had a different layout, a rotate about 180 degrees with the loading that was facing towards the east of the property so that the front of the building with the parking would face South Washington Avenue. But after evaluation and looking at it, we had decided to have the layout that you currently see on screen, which rotates the building so that the loading faces South Washington Avenue so that it's not facing the east with some of the residential properties along New Brunswick Avenue and the cul-de-sac there. So just a note for the board that it is a little bit unconventional for the loading to be facing South Washington Avenue in this way, but with the residential in the what I'll call the rear of the property to the east, we wanted to provide, we didn't want to have the loading and the operations be in close proximity to the residential. Relative to parking for the site, we are proposing 144 parking spaces, which satisfies the requirements in the redevelopment plan. This includes six ADA accessible parking spaces, two of which are van accessible spaces. And we also propose seven electric vehicle parking spaces, which are located to the north and south sides of this easterly car parking area. We are proposing 20 trailer parking spaces to the north side of the building as well, on the north end of the site. We are proposing concrete sidewalk along the south, the east, and the north sides of the building to service the car parking spaces and provide access to the building. We are also proposing a sidewalk, a little bit difficult to see, along the west side of the property where this access ramp exists, with connections from along the north of the property out to the right-of-way for the ramp, and on the south side of the property as well to the sidewalk for the ramp. There are ADA accessible routes proposed to the building from the ADA parking spaces to the entrance doors of the building. I'd also like to note that we are aware that the redevelopment plan calls for a sidewalk along the frontage of South Washington Avenue as well. Myself, along with the other professionals, some of which you'll talk to tonight, and the applicant, IDIL, we are in process of reaching out to the DOT regarding that sidewalk along the frontage of South Washington Avenue and going through the proper permitting with them as part of what is required in the redevelopment plan. I will note, I understand it's separate from the application or resolution compliance, but it is something that we will be doing as part of the redevelopment plan.
And Alex, let me just interrupt you there just to make clear, and you correct me and obviously confirm for the record. Essentially, we are in the process of getting together what is needed for meeting with the DEP to start as the first step to ultimately install that sidewalk on South Washington, which, as it is right of way of DOT, we need their approval for. So that, you know, I assume will happen. Obviously, we're waiting for tonight to finish, and then we would start as a first step that pre-application meeting. Is that accurate?
With the NJDOT, yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
As far as access for the site, access is from Washington Plaza Avenue, which comes via the signalized intersection from South Washington Avenue, as well with that intersection and another intersection with this access ramp that comes from South Washington Avenue heading northbound. So you have a stop-controlled intersection here with the site with Washington Plaza Avenue, as well as further to the west, the signalized intersection with South Washington Avenue. The site proposes two-way circulation around the entire site. I would like to note that circulation for trucks will be limited to the west truck court, which is located to the west of the building, as well as the north. There's another court to the north, really more for access to the north parking spaces for the truck, the tractor trailers and the trucks. The trucks will not circulate, I would say, on the east side and around on the south side of the building. That is specifically designated for car access only for parking.
Is it true, Alex, just to make that clear on this rendering, it's not as clear, but the site plan makes it. I think that's consistent with the allocation of the heavy duty pavement. That is kind of limited to the areas where we would anticipate trucks.
That is correct, Mr. Contreras. And I'll zoom in a little bit for the members of the board and the public that are watching. It is a little bit hard to see, but you can see a different coloration of the pavement sections on the north side and then on the west side of the building. It's a little bit darker to denote the heavy duty asphalt that will be installed for the truck access. And then it's a bit of a lighter gray on the car parking to the east and to the south, which is standard duty asphalt, again, for vehicular access for cars and no trucks to be circulating through this portion of the property. The truck court and docks along the west side of the building total 130 feet in width for truck access and maneuvering. So truck access will come in from the site entrance, access the loading on the west side of the building, be able to turn around and exit. They can also access the trailer parking on the north. Relative to signs for the property, we are proposing one monument sign for the site near the northwest corner. I will zoom in, so bear with me. I apologize if I'm making anybody nauseous with the zooming in and out. We do have a monument sign just off the northwest corner of the building. I will circle it with a blue pen here. That sign will be less than 75 square feet. The dimensions of the sign, there was a comment in the, I believe the planner's report about a discrepancy for the area. The dimensions of the sign are about 8 feet tall by 9 feet wide, if you include the base of the sign, but without including the base, the sign height is actually 6 feet tall. So it'd be a 6 by 9 foot sign, which in both cases, that'll be less than the required 75 square feet. But we will clarify any sort of discrepancy on the plans through any subsequent revisions.
And just, Alex, again, just kind of to confirm for the record, and I believe this is the case, but please confirm. Obviously, we'll correct any discrepancies during resolution compliance and the like. But as a blanket statement, the intention is that all signs will comply with the applicable redevelopment plan or other standards. We're not looking for any variances for signs.
Correct.
Okay.
As far as the building signage is concerned, we are proposing 3 wall signs for the building, each of which will comply with the area requirement of 150 square feet and no more than one sign on any facade. So we will be complying with the code relative to the building signs as well. And I just, the architect can maybe speak more to any of the proposed building signs, but I would like to assure the board there will not be any signs on the east side of the building facing the residential or the self-storage facility. Just wanted to make sure that that was clear. Relative to drainage for the site, there's not much there. The stormwater management proposed on site is designed in compliance with the NJDEP stormwater management regulations. Stormwater is generally conveyed through a network of underground pipes throughout the site, as well as a grass swale on the east side of the property, ultimately discharging to a stormwater basin on the west, just to the west of the property in the NJDOT's right-of-way, which is similar to the way that it drains today. The proposed pipes that will be discharging back to the basin tie into existing pipes upstream of the basin. So we are not proposing any changes to the existing basin, to the discharges to the basin. And from a flow perspective, we will be matching or reducing flows from a stormwater to that basin. Relative to impervious coverage for the site, we are actually reducing the impervious coverage overall by 15,694 square feet, which is roughly a little more than a third of an acre or 3.6% of the site area for the property. So reduction of impervious coverage there. There's also a reduction of motor vehicle surface area. So you have less concrete, asphalt, and any kind of areas where vehicles can access. And that's due to the nature of the warehouse building being a bit larger than the existing office building. Relative to utilities for the site, we are proposing a gas service connection out to South Washington Avenue. We have electric with telephone and cable tying in from a utility pole along the entrance to the north of the north side of Washington Plaza Avenue, as well as a proposed utility pole to the northwest corner of the site. Water will tap off of the main and South Washington Avenue and then come in from Washington Plaza Avenue, come into the site with a water loop around the full perimeter of the building and fire hydrants tied off of that water loop for emergencies and firefighting purposes.
And I would confirm for the record, and Alex, please confirm it, that the fire department did review, we did separately submit to them, they did review it, and there were not any comments on the plan, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
From a sanitary sewer perspective, the building is tying into an existing 8-inch sanitary sewer line via an existing manhole located on the site near the northwest corner of the building. So from utility perspective, the building will be fully connected, gas, electric, water, telephone, cable. Okay. I'd like to spend a little bit of time just talking through some of the landscaping for the site. So we have met with early in the process, during when the redevelopment plan was being considered, we had met with the township's landscape architect, Mr. Hinterstein, just to talk about the site landscaping and talk through the redevelopment plan as well. So what we're proposing from a landscape perspective here tonight with this application, we have a lot of existing trees. We have a pretty good amount of existing trees that are on site, which we intend to maintain a majority of. And we would also like to supplement those with a combination of shade trees, evergreen trees, deciduous shrubs, evergreen shrubs to really kind of bolster the landscaping and the buffering for the property. We have, you'll see on this colorized version of the site plan that we have landscape screening around the property with a mix, again, of the existing and proposed landscaping. I do want to kind of call out and highlight on the east side of the property where we're proposing an infill of shade and evergreen trees, along with some shrubs as well, to complement the existing trees in order to enhance the buffer that exists specifically for the residential properties on New Brunswick Avenue. We think that adding the a substantial amount of shrubs, along, as well as a row of evergreen trees that go along the property line there to the east, will really provide a nice, strong, adequate buffer and screening to kind of limit the visual impact from of that warehouse to the residential properties. I'll say to the southeast, as you head north on the east side of the property, you do run into the self-storage facility that's there. So that also helps kind of create a buffer. But from the residential perspective, really enhancing that landscaping, really kind of building that up along the property line there to limit the visual impact. And a comment in Mr. Hinterstein's letter also referenced adding some additional landscaping. I'll circle it with a blue pen on the Exhibit A2 here. We would be looking to do some additional landscaping to enhance that buffer further, just to comply with Mr. Hinterstein's comment as well.
And I just in terms of kind of screening and just putting the whole plan into context, currently, and again, correct for the record and confirm for the record, I should say, as it exists now, there is parking, car parking in this exact area, and we've maintained it here, essentially, correct?
Correct. In the existing condition, there is car parking for the office building that's there.
And obviously, it's obvious that you know, with the design of this building, it's essentially accomplished the screening because the operations, the truck operations, the building is between the residences. Besides all the screening, and the building is between the residences and those operations.
That is correct. I had mentioned it earlier. Maybe I can I'll highlight it again. But from the residential perspective, for the homeowners on New Brunswick Avenue and those living there. On top of the landscape screening, yes, there is car parking that we are proposing here, which is similar to what exists there today. But from the loading docks and the loading operations, that is on the opposite side of the building on the west side, which would not be visible to the residents on New Brunswick Avenue.
Please continue.
Along the west side of the property, there is also a row of trees and shrubs as well to provide some screening from South Washington Avenue. So see the little landscape island just west of the truck court and just west of the loading dock. That's also there to enhance some of the visual screening and limit the impacts from South Washington Avenue as well, driving down the right of way. And I will highlight, we will be adding additional landscaping on the north side as well, relative to one of Mr. Hinterstein's comments. But we do have a few shade trees on the north side as well near the truck parking. One other item just in the same spirit of screening, I'd just like to discuss fencing for the site. Currently along the residential, there exists a 6 foot high stockade fence. We are proposing to replace in kind any of the sections of that fence that appear to be in disrepair, have any sort of damage associated with them. We will replace that. That'll be closer to the property line within, I'll say, plus or minus 5 feet along the east there, because it already exists today. But that is another kind of mechanism that we're looking to improve and enhance on top of the landscaping to kind of help screen the residential properties and improve that visual impact for the building and the operation of the warehouse. There is also proposed a 6 foot high board on board fence to the south of the property that fronts on Route 287 there as well. So we are proposing a new 6 foot high board on board fence, which will ultimately connect to the existing stockade fence to kind of provide a continuous fence run along the south and east side of the property up to, you know, where the self-storage facility is really more bordering on the east of the property line. Relative to the lighting proposed throughout the site, and Mr. Contreras had mentioned it in the open, that we do have a few deviations from a design perspective, so we'll call them design waivers. Other than the design waivers for the maximum foot candles at property lines, the lighting for the property does comply with the requirements of the borough. We are proposing a combination of pole-mounted area lights for the drive aisles and parking areas, as well as building-mounted lights. All the pole-mounted lights that are proposed throughout the site will have shields to reduce glare to, you know, adjacent properties. They are the LED lights, and they even have individual shields themselves to reduce any glare that goes kind of, I'll call, behind the light and the way it's not intended to be shining. We did note the design waivers for the maximum foot candles at the property line. So I'm going to zoom in a little bit to discuss the two areas where those design waivers are being requested. The first area is at the entrance to the site from Washington Plaza Avenue. We have readings at the property line of 1.4 foot candles, which exceeds the 0.5 foot candle maximum. Typically, a driveway entrances or entrances to a site, we do like to add a bit more lighting there and light that up a little bit more just to enhance visibility in an effort to promote safety for cars and vehicles coming into the site at the intersection. Further to the south side of the site, we have a sidewalk that connects from the property to the right-of-way, where we are also connecting to the proposed sidewalk along this ramp that comes from South Washington Avenue, which ultimately would connect to a sidewalk that comes over that's part of the overpass of South Washington Avenue over I-287. We have an exceedance of the maximum lighting at the property line here as well, which is 3.9 foot candles, again, just to help light pedestrian access ways, just to enhance visibility and in an effort to promote safety for anybody utilizing the sidewalk here back accessing out to the right of way.
And just to confirm for the record, based on that factual summary, is it your expert opinion that it is certainly reasonable based on the safety component and the lack of kind of detriment here? It is reasonable to grant both of those design waivers.
I would say it's reasonable, yes. You know, promoting safety, having better visibility in these areas, as well as I see a very limited detriment considering the locations of which we are exceeding on the property line from a lighting perspective are in a right of way with its DOT for South Washington Avenue and the access ramp.
Okay.
From that essentially wraps up the kind of the proposed conditions presentation from that perspective. Mr. Contreras, I do have some comments relative to some review letters that we have received that I think might be beneficial to kind of highlight now and go through.
Yeah, and even before you do that, if you can very quickly just run through either things, outside agency approvals. I know we have letter of no interest and some other things. If you could maybe just run through those.
Sure, I'll highlight a few of those items. Relative to the DOT, we do have a letter of no interest for the proposal for the site. That is separate from the sidewalk that will be proposed along South Washington Avenue. That's something we're pursuing separately with the DOT. But relative to the proposed improvements for the site for the warehouse, we do have the letter of no interest from the DOT. As well as the county, we have an exemption from the county. We made the application from the county planning board. They also granted us an exemption from their requirements as well, noting no interest.
Okay, thank you. And there's no other land use approvals as it relates to anything, wetlands or anything else?
No, high level from the DEP's perspective, there's no DEP approvals for this site. From a soil conservation district, that's something that goes through Piscataway itself after any sort of planning board approval, should there be one. So that's something we would apply for after the fact with the township.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I think it makes sense to run through the report and note. I know you said you've spoken to the landscape architect and others, so perhaps you can provide the board with a general summary of that.
Sure. We'll start with the letter, the Divisions of Engineering and Planning and Development letter from Mr. Henry Hinterstein, dated October 25th, 2023. Mr. Hinterstein and I spoke on Friday. We went through and reviewed his letter, and in general, we came to an agreement on all of the comments in the letter in order to comply with his comments. Just a few items, just I think that warrant a little bit of a discussion. The architect in their testimony will speak to, there was a request for additional color banding for the building from an aesthetic perspective. They'll touch on that. There was a comment relative to the stormwater basin to the west of the site in the DOT's right of way, and you know, kind of pursuing proper maintenance for that basin. It looks like maybe there's some grading and lawn mowing and maybe uncovering of some low flow channel that has to be done that's been overgrown. Discussion with Mr. Hinterstein, we said we would work with the DOT to request old plans, talk to the DOT about maintaining that, uncovering any sort of low flow channel, making sure they're maintaining their riprap and stone at their flared end sections in accordance with Soil Conservation District regulations. So we'll work with the DOT and Mr. Hinterstein on that. We'd also
and just to clarify for that, so make sure I understand it for the record and the board members and such, and the public as necessary. It is obviously the DOT's area, so we're essentially looking to volunteer to assist, but ultimately it is the DOT's property, essentially, right?
That is correct. It is within the NJDOT's right of way. So we are agreeing to help assist with that, reach out to the DOT, look to them to providing specific maintenance for the basin, kind of clean it up to make sure that it is still functioning properly as it was when it was installed.
Okay.
Another item in the discussion with Mr. Hinterstein was to just do a video of the downstream pipe, which we can coordinate with the DOT on as well. We could also have the video done as the applicant as well, just kind of vetting that out with the DOT to make sure no issues from their perspective. But we can do that to kind of confirm the physical conditions of the pipe and see if there are any issues from a downstream perspective.
Okay.
Another item. For Mr. Hinterstein's letter, he had asked for some additional landscaping. I'll note them on the Exhibit A2 here. To the east of the building, near the residential properties, add a little bit more infill landscaping. He had asked for some areas to the north of the trailer parking to infill a little bit more landscaping, which we can do. He had also asked, which we noted we would discuss with the DOT as well, maybe adding a little bit more landscaping on the outside of the basin behind the curb, along the ramp coming from South Washington Avenue. I will sketch it in blue, but essentially it's on the north side and then the east side of the basin along the ramp there. Nothing substantial, but a few trees kind of dress that up from a landscape perspective. So we will certainly.
And again, that's an instance where the DOT basically has to give us the right.
Correct. So we will coordinate with the DOT on that item as well. Other than that, in Mr. Henderson's letter, we came to an agreement to comply with the comments in his letter. I shouldn't say other than that. I say in addition to those, I just wanted to highlight a few notes that we had from our discussion. Relative to the CME Associates letter as well that we received dated October 20th of 2023, before jumping into the specific comments, there are a few items in the front end of the report. I want to kind of highlight the building height. There is a discrepancy between the civil plans and the architectural plans. That really is due to the civil plans measuring building height from the average finished grade around the building, which is consistent with what the code requires for Piscataway. So the architectural plan from an elevation perspective will show one height, but when we measure the height from a code and a zoning requirement perspective, we measure it from the average finished grade, which accounts for the discrepancy. But we'll make sure that we coordinate with the architect and maybe ask the architect to note on their plans the height that would be measured from the mean finished grade. There was a note about the office space within the warehouse. I'm not sure where the discrepancy or the confusion comes from, but just for the record to confirm, the anticipated office space within the proposed warehouse space, again, assuming potentially two tenants, would be 6,388 square feet. And I would just like to confirm for the record that the light fixtures will all be dark sky compliant. Relative to some of the comments in the mentioned CME letter, comment number four, we will clarify the side versus rear yards on the plan. Seems there is a little bit of a discrepancy with calling the east boundary a side yard when it might be better suited as a rear yard. That will not result in any sort of deviations from the code, but we will clarify that on the plan. There was a discrepancy of the lot width and the lot depth on the plan. The existing lot width and lot depth are shown. There was we flipped the numbers, there's a typo on what was proposed, but essentially the existing condition for lot width and depth is not changing. We are not changing the size of the lot, the configuration of the property lines or the boundaries. So So those items will be clarified on future revision of the plans. Comment number 7 also talks about building height discrepancy with the architectural plan, which I just discussed. There was a comment regarding screening on the roof, which is related to the cell equipment, which the project architect will walk through during their testimony. I noted it earlier in my testimony as well, but a discrepancy for the sign area for the monument sign, what we had listed in our sign table was really inclusive of the base of the sign as well. The detail references just the sign area itself, which is a bit smaller in both instances. Whether we include this, the area of the base or not, it will be compliant with the requirements of less than 75 square feet in area for the monument sign. So just to clarify that. And then for a few other comments relative to parking, to resolve discrepancy of a calculation versus what's required for the number of EV parking spaces and a credit for the EV parking spaces based on the New Jersey State statute, we will rectify and clarify those items on the plan as well. But I assure the board, those comply with the requirements for the EV for the state statute, and we will just update on the plan in a future revision. Mr. Conchitoria, we also received a traffic letter as well. I will reserve that for our traffic engineer and his testimony, but they can attest any of the comments from the board's traffic engineer as well.
And then just to be comprehensive, items 14 and 15 reference remediation and LSRP, which we did answer in Mr. Fisher's testimony. The single discrete item that required some soil excavation has been completed. And the RAO, which is the final document that evidences the matter is closed, once the report is filed, will be also issued. So that should be in the next, as Mr. Fisher indicated, roughly 60 days, 60 to 90 days, but it might be even sooner. So clarify that that has also been. Anything else, Alex?
That's all I have.
Okay, those are the questions I have for Mr. LeMay.
Thank you. Members of the board, you've heard the testimony of this witness. Does anybody on the board have questions of this witness?
Madam Chair. Sure. Oh, go ahead. Yes. Go ahead, Dawn. I yield to you. It's Reverend Kenny.
Thank you, Reverend Kenny. Madam Chair, if I may, it's not a question, but it's a comment with regard to the staff report. There is one additional item that you will not see in the staff report. However, it will be required, is the installation of a repeater system for emergency personnel. Is that something that the applicant is agreeable to?
Yes, I'll have Mr. Fisher just confirm. That was something that's in the redevelopment plan, which is okay. A requirement. So I think it's yes, but Mr. Fisher, if you can just confirm for the record that will be done.
Yes, I confirm that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ken, Reverend Kenny, do you have a question?
Yes, just for the safety factor of it, I guess that would be the northwest corner where the car entrance comes in. Is that for cars only, no trucks? Am I correct?
The entrance right here?
Yes.
This is for cars and trucks.
Car? I guess it's the other entrance, I guess.
So I guess I'll just circle the
entrance right
near the site. This is for trucks.
Right.
And you will have cars and trucks.
Right.
Along the north of the building. The truck access will stop at
right.
the building. Car
at the staging area.
To the east.
Right.
No truck access to the east and the south side of the building.
Okay. So there's no interaction with the cars on that side at all.
Correct. Interaction with the cars for the loading zone operations, very limited interaction with the truck and trailer parking.
Okay, that's my one question. Number two question, your loading operation hours, there's not going to be any overnight stage trucking there? Am I correct? You got certain hours of the operations, or you don't know until you get a tenant?
Well, yeah, and I would also add, right, I mean, obviously if there are municipal ordinances that apply, but this right. in the reality is that warehouses are essentially 24-hour operations, in the sense the trucks are, the work is done in interior essentially overnight, so they're loading and that kind of thing, so that's just the way it operates. So that is what it would be. We don't have a specific tenant to be able to give you a specific answer, but obviously those are general ordinances in town, and whatever they are would have to be complied with. But as a general matter, every warehouse is essentially 24 hours because the as you'll hear from the traffic engineer, the trucks leave before the rush hour, and so they're loaded overnight inside.
Right. But my question is, I know there's compliances in the state that you cannot run these units diesel.
Oh, you mean idling. You're talking about idling. Minutes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. Alex, why don't you just confirm, obviously, there are the idling signs and, you know, there's state laws that apply. Will apply
with. Okay, that's the only questions I have. Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions from members of the board?
Madam Chair, if I might, this is Councilwoman Cahill. Mm-hmm. So Reverend Kenny already asked one of my questions about the idling. I mean, I see the parking there, the truck parking there. I'm, you know, just again, you know, reiterating that although the parking is there additionally for any trucks that may, I guess need to wait to be loaded up. You know, that's a big concern of ours in town. I'm sure many of you've heard, you know, trucks getting backed up, you know, when things happen. So we certainly don't want that to happen, and certainly don't want to have obviously any idling going on either while trucks there. What I'm mostly concerned about is, certainly on the residential side, I appreciate the saving of the existing mature trees and also the addition of them. Also noting that the lighting in the back will be compliant so that it's not going out into the neighborhood and it complies with all our lighting ordinances. And you may have specifically said that, but I didn't, you know, my audio, I apologize, it's going a little bit in and out there. And then additionally, since, you know, the loading is sort of facing, you know, a main road thoroughfare. I see the additional, you know, trees, shrubs, you know, the landscaping there. The question for you, right over in that, you know, general, well, not that particular vicinity, but almost parallel to that, New Brunswick Road, there's a Bob's Discount warehouse there where there is kind of like a berm that's built up and they don't have loading facing the road there. I mean, is there any opportunity that the applicant would consider building this up so that, you know, because right now there's not, you know, there's not a lot there. That was an office, right? You go in parking there. Would there be any consideration to adding additional sort of soil there so that the investment of this additional landscaping could at the start have even more of an effect of a barrier, or even consider putting in
the berm?
Yeah, I said the berm, but the... I don't know if I, you know, again, I don't know if this would comply because is this the frontage? Is this the side? You know, this is the frontage. Some sort of maybe a privacy fencing, one of those solid fencing, vinyl fencings that would add a little bit more buffering. I don't know, actually, you know, just put an asterisk next to that. I'm not sure that that would being compliant with one of our ordinance about fencing because we have certain ones with frontage. And Dawn, I'll let you chime in on that if it's possible. Just wondering if it's a consideration because I do see that the applicant here wants to create that buffering in order to sort of offset that look. Just wondering if there's anything more that might add additionally to the start of very young vegetation.
Yeah, and I would
help. Yeah, if I may, Mr. Conchitori, Chairwoman Cahill, I'm sorry. It's an excellent question. And what I would like to note to you and to the members of the board is that in the landscape area where we are proposing trees and shrubs to the west of the loading, we actually do on the grading plan show a 3 to 4 foot tall berm in that area. So which is you're dead on there, like perfect. It's a great question for the buffering. It really enhances it. So we do have a 3 to 4 foot tall berm in that landscape area as well. I'll also note that South Washington Avenue is at elevation, I think it's at around elevation 80 or 81, which changes along as you go north and south. The height of that berm will be at around elevation 89. So there is already a little bit of a grade differential there as well. On top of the berm being added with the landscape buffering, that should really provide a nice screen and a buffer to the loading operations for the building from South Washington Avenue. So I'm going to try and go in reverse order of your questions if I can. The lighting, I would like to confirm for you the light poles specifically near the residential that are proposed along the east side of the car parking on the east to the east of the building. Dark sky compliant, will be facing down and will have shields to limit glare and visual impact to the residents to the east. So I wanted to note that for you as well. I don't know if there was another question in there.
That was it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great questions, Chairman McHale. Thank you.
No, I appreciate that. And I didn't notice the berm, but I do appreciate that very much.
Excellent. Are there any other questions from members of the board? If not, I'll open it up to the public. Ms. Buckley, would you see if there's anyone raising their hand that wishes to be
heard? Can you please
heard?
Unshare your screen, Alex?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Okay, members of the public, if you have any questions or comments for this witness, you could raise your hand on the bottom. No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Close to the public. I think we can have your next witness.
Great, and that would be Dan McGinnis.
Mr. McGinnis, are you present?
Yes, I am here.
Could you raise your right hand? You swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth.
I do.
Your name and address, please.
Dan McGinnis, McMahon Bowman Company, office address 460 Veterans Drive, Burlington, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Mr. McGinnis, you're here to provide traffic engineering testimony. Can you please provide the board with your credentials, experience in terms of giving expert testimony in the area of traffic?
Sure. I've got a Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineering from North Carolina State University with an emphasis in transportation. Been practicing traffic engineering in New Jersey since 2004. Been a licensed professional engineer in New Jersey since 2008. I have a professional traffic operations engineer certification from the Institute of Transportation Engineers. Those licenses and certifications are current, and I've testified for various land use boards throughout the state of New Jersey as an expert witness in traffic engineering, including Woodbridge Township in Middlesex County, but not this board.
Great. I would ask that Mr. McGinnis be qualified as a traffic engineering expert.
Yes. He's so qualified. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McGinnis, similar to Mr. LeMay, I know that you did prepare a traffic statement that has been submitted to the board, was reviewed by the board's traffic engineering consultant. So perhaps you can walk through making reference to that statement as you need, if you can walk through the pertinence of the traffic engineering aspects of this project.
Certainly. So yeah, Mr. Cacciatore is referring to our traffic statement dated September 16th, 2022, which I'll just summarize briefly. So in that summary, we compared the site traffic we expect the proposed use to generate and compared it to the existing use or the previous use at full occupancy of the existing office buildings. And so just to very briefly summarize, the whether on a daily basis or a peak hour basis, the traffic will be significantly reduced by a factor of 6 or 7. So the proposed use would generate about 1/6 or 1/7 of the traffic of the existing use, the office building at full occupancy. So on a daily basis, the existing office building, when fully occupied, would generate about a little over 2,000 trips a day. That's in and out. Where the proposed warehouse is expected to generate a little under 300. And in each of the morning and afternoon peak hours, the previous use generated about a little less than 300 trips in and out during each peak hour, whereas the warehouse would generate a little under 50. So significantly less overall trips. Now, of course, the truck traffic will increase, but will still be pretty low. And as Mr. Cacciatore mentioned, it'll be well distributed throughout the day. So We would expect about 93 truck trips in and out per day, but only three and five in the morning and afternoon peak hours, respectively. So not a significant impact expected from the development in terms of site traffic. And as Mr. LeMay mentioned, the site is blessed with excellent access. In fact, Alex, could you bring up that exhibit A1, the aerial exhibit? So, as Alex mentioned, there's direct access to the partial interchange of Washington Avenue and 287 to the north and south, right there, Washington Avenue, and then to the north and then east via Stelton Avenue, you can access the other movements to 287. So this is where we expect most of the truck traffic to travel to and to arrive from when accessing the site. And of course, these are county and state routes designed to accommodate truck traffic. So that summarizes our report. I would like to address one of the comments from the board traffic engineer's letter. The question was, how will the truck traffic from the development, how is it expected to affect queuing along the approach to the traffic signal along the Washington Plaza approach to Washington Avenue? And the answer is, I mean, it's minimal traffic. So while we have not yet performed traffic counts or analyzed the capacity of that intersection, you know, the most demanding period for traffic leaving the site is the afternoon peak hour, in which 29 passenger vehicles and three trucks are expected to leave the site. And that traffic signal operates on a 90-second cycle. So on average throughout the afternoon peak hour, that's one passenger vehicle every four signal cycles and one truck every 13 signal cycles. So we would not expect the site to significantly increase the queuing at that traffic signal. And then I guess that brings me around to DOT permitting. I just wanted to comment a little further to expand a little more on the statements Mr. Conchitori, Mr. LeMay mentioned. As Alex mentioned, we a letter of no interest was obtained, but we do expect to we do expect a permit will be required to permit the proposed sidewalk at the signal. And then along with the sidewalk, we would expect DOT to require pedestrian signal heads, which the implementation of which would require some minor modifications of the signal timing. So we will work with DOT to see if there are any incidental improvements we can make to the signal timing to make things operate better out there. So that's the direct testimony I've prepared, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
That's all the questions I have for this witness.
Members of the board, do you have any questions of this witness? Hearing no answer is open. I will open it up to the public. Ms. Buckley, would you check and see if there's anyone in the public who wishes to ask some questions of this witness?
No one's raising their hands, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Close to the public. Do you have another witness, Mr.
Yes, Gunther? I do. My last witness is Claudio Brita. He is the project architect.
Okay, you may proceed.
Is Mr. Brita present?
Yes.
I am, yes.
Raise your right hand. You swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth.
Yes.
Your name and address, please.
Excuse me. Claudio Brita, Weir Malcolm, 110 Edison Place in Newark, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Mr. Brita, if you can briefly provide the board with your credentials and experience testimony to qualify as a licensed professional architect and give such expert testimony.
Sure. Good evening. Again, my name is Claudio Brita. I'm a licensed and registered architect in the state of New Jersey, as well as three other states here in the East Coast. I've been in the field of architecture for over 21 years now. And I have a bachelor's in architecture from Pratt Institute in New York. Although I've not provided any professional testimony in Piscataway, I have provided in other parts of Middlesex County, the last one being in Sayreville.
I would ask that Mr. Breda be qualified as a professional expert testimony in the area of architecture.
Yes, he's acceptable.
Thank you. Breda, if you can, similar to the last two witnesses, if you can run the board through the pertinent parts of your testimony as it relates to this project, the design of the building, making particular note of the couple of items that we know questions have been asked, either in reports or otherwise, for example, screening of the rooftop antennas, and there was a question about banding of the color banding. So if you can please provide the board with a summary of your services and your conclusions.
Sure. Just start off with a quick overview of the overall floor plan. As previously noted, the overall building is 155,272,000 square feet. So the overall building length is 570 feet in the depth of 275 feet. All the exterior walls are made of precast concrete walls. With again, with your typical punch-ins for doors for life safety, as well as all the dock doors, which are here in Plan North, which is actually the west. So there's a total of 24 dock doors, plus two drive-in ramps for box trucks and vans, etc. As noted earlier by a previous witness, this building is speculative, with the idea being for one tenant, but it does have the flexibility for two potential tenants. As you can see here in the corners, these shaded areas are the potential areas for the office spaces for the future tenants. Again, it does have the flexibility for two potential tenants, as you can see here with these two corners here on the plan south.
And Mr. Byrne, let me just interrupt you. Is this the exact plan that was submitted? I just want to make sure if I have to mark it.
It is, yes.
Okay.
One other item to bring up here, and again, plan north or west, again, you have some of the building infrastructure, which is the typical fire pump and electrical room. In this case, we do have an access ladder here for roof access. So that's the way of the land for the overall floor plan. Going back now to the roof plan, as noted earlier, this roof will be designed and be ready for live loads and dead loads associated, not only with snow, of course, in New Jersey, but also for the solar panels themselves. So the structural design will be enhanced to the additional 5 pounds per square foot for the solar panels. Although hard to see here, but which I'll note in on the other sheets, but you can see here on some of the corners, which is actually this corner, as well as this corner, the roof antennas from T-Mobile, which I'll go further a little bit on the other sheets. So jumping on to the elevations, as I noted, the exterior walls are precast concrete panels. The main colors are two tones of gray, which are relatively the aesthetics or the branding colors of IDI Logistics, if you will, but some highlights of blue, particularly at the corners of the building where we do have the office spaces. The branding colors for IDI is a gradient going from really dark blue all the way to a very light, almost white color at the top of the parapet. Again, it's a lighter gray on the top and then a darker tone on the bottom of the concrete panels. And then we do provide some breaks here with some recessed panels with darker tones of gray, again, to, for lack of a better term, it's a modern interpretation of pilasters. So that's the east elevation. And again, you can see here what I mentioned before regarding the antennas here in the corners. This is a good example here. There's some screening here to conceal the antennas. And the idea is to color match the paint of the concrete panels below. To the top of the antennas, the overall height is right now 61 feet from the finished floor elevation of the building. And the typical parapet height is 45 feet, 4 inches. That's the average parapet to the top.
And I know you, I see, Mr. Bretta, that you have it listed, but perhaps you can also just reference for the record the height from the roof deck itself.
Sure. So from the roof deck itself to the top of the screening, we have 14 feet one. And again, from the top of the roof deck itself to the top or the most high, or the highest point of the antenna, for that matter, it'll be 18 feet one.
Thank you.
Sure. Again, as I noted on the floor plan, you'll see here the typical punched openings for egress doors and life safety and fire department access into the building. And again, the corners are just a little bit more dressed up, if you will. They do have a canopy over the main entries for the office space, and has a little bit more glazing just to bring in natural light into the office space. The other elevations, such as the south and north elevation, are a little bit more toned down, if you will. It doesn't have as much as the blue as the other elevations, but it does keep the aesthetic moving throughout the building with the same reveals of the concrete panels and the same two tones of the gray. We do add a little pops of color here and there, as you can see here with the blue, which again is standard of the IDI color brands, and just some form lines with some additional reveals there just to dress up the concrete a little bit more. The other elevation, which is where all the dock doors are, as I noted before, is a total of 24 dock doors, and you can see here the two driving ramps for vans and box trucks, etc. This elevation does have some additional punch openings for clerestory windows above, just to bring in some natural light into the warehouse itself for all the workers as they're loading up the trucks. So that's the elevations. In the last page is really just a 3D rendering of the typical corner. As I mentioned here, this is the office, one of the corners of the offices for that matter. And you can see here the screening to conceal the T-Mobile antennas right behind it. That's pretty much it.
No, I will point you to, and Mr. Fisher obviously can jump in as needed. There was a comment in one of the reports about adding, and I want to see if I can find that comment specifically, about adding some additional color to possibly add to the interest on certain of the walls. If you can comment on that, or Mr. Fisher, just in terms of how we would look to respond to that comment.
I mean, we're open to it. We just haven't gone beyond this initial design. I'm assuming it would probably be handled with resolution compliance and with the city planner, is my guess.
Just so there are resolution compliance, you could see to add in potentially some additional color or and Mr. Bretta, that makes sense to you?
It does, yeah. We're certainly amenable to make the necessary changes.
Okay. Those are the questions I have for this witness.
Thank you. Mr. Contratore, have we marked all the exhibits of anything that was used tonight?
This one is new. The others were plans that were submitted, so Mr. Bretta did not have to mark them. They're the ones that are submitted as the application. This one, I believe, is new, right, Mr. Bretta?
It is.
Yes, yeah, so we should mark this last rendering here. Thank you. Thank you, madam.
I believe it should be three.
Okay, thank you. That is it.
Okay. Members of the board, do you have any questions to ask of this witness?
Madam Chair, not so sure I'm going to ask of the witness, although maybe Dawn could jump in here. The commentary about the additional coloring, I'm wondering if any professionals here want to enlighten me as to what additional coloring they'd be looking for. And like where?
That comment was in Mr. Hendricks' report. I don't think he's with us tonight.
Mr. Keneally, your audio is pretty bad.
Gabrielle. It's Dawn. It's comment six of the staff report. Henry was looking. He didn't make any specific recommendation as to color, but he was just asking if there could be some other color incorporated into the walls to break it up essentially.
And And certainly just to kind of, obviously we have everyone here to answer. I think I always like to try and address, certainly this is the way they kind of do it. These are the colors certainly, but this is the way their buildings are generally done. So this is what they would like. But certainly if there's a specific request for something, they're amenable to consider it. You know, I don't know if that helps you or not. So
yeah, they're open to discussing. Yeah, no, because I'm coming, Mr. Conciliatore, from the perspective of, well, you know, the aesthetics are very important for me. You know, that's kind of the perspective I'm always looking at. What I bring to this board is looking like, as a resident, what it would look. And I'm just concerned if we're, well, maybe I shouldn't be concerned. Will we see the final plans before this board, Dawn, before it goes into effect? Because, like, quite frankly, a pop of orange through here wouldn't be something I'd be looking for.
No, it would. Well, let me just say this. And it would be, I assume, and Ms. Fisher, please comment, these specific colors are the ones that are actually in the redevelopment plan. And so it would be the colors you're looking at. So as a matter of color, there wouldn't be any other color introduced.
Okay. Then that is fine. Okay.
Yeah. No oranges.
Yeah, there's no other color but the colors you're looking at. It would just be a matter of, I assume, possibly adding a couple more blue. I don't know the exact term. You know, a couple more of those blue reveals or whatever you want to call them. It's that kind of thing. But there would be no other color introduced.
Yeah.
Okay. And as long as it's not a big blue stripe along the top, the way I've seen another town allow another big building to do, where it looks just not good. And by the way, I wouldn't mind orange because I am a Met fan. So, but
well, there you go.
But not here, on your building, but not on the building. Okay.
But Gabrielle, it will not come back to this board. That if this is approved, you won't see this again.
Okay. So could I just, and I can only imagine that the architect would never do this, but could we not put a big blue band or anything like that up the top, whatever the interest is, just keep it very tasteful?
Yeah, I don't think I'll do that either.
I mean, thank you. I'm not going to name names of the next door town, but we have a beautiful set of distribution centers. But when you go down that road, the only thing you can see is an ugly white building with a big bright blue band along the top. And I won't even mention the company. Let's try to keep this like looking tasteful, you know, as much as, you know, we can with warehousing, just to make it look as tasteful as possible. Thank you.
Okay. Well, as Mr. Fisher noted earlier, you know, we are seeking higher class type of development, so.
That's appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, we have any other final questions of this witness, members of the board? If not, let's open it up to the public.
Can you please share your screen, Claudia? Thank you.
Okay. We're now opening up to the public for any questions that they might have of this particular witness.
No one, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Close to the public.
And thank you, Madam Chair. I do not have any other witnesses.
Thank you so much. Members of the board, you heard the totality of this application. If there's no discussion, does someone want to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I'll make that motion. This is Councilwoman Cahill, to approve this application based upon the staff compliance with the staff reporting. Dawn, is there anything else I'm missing here?
So I think
the repeater system that is not in that staff report, but is part of required of the redevelopment plan. Anything else, Dawn?
The other, you heard testimony that they are working with the DOT about the installation of the sidewalks along South Washington. Mm-hmm. Certainly that will not hold up any construction, but that will be a requirement of the redevelopers agreement.
Okay, so that with the final approval and opening of the building cannot be done until that is complete.
That will not hold them up. That will not. Okay. It will be part of the redevelopment agreement.
Part of they have to do it.
Correct.
But they'll have a period of time to get that done.
Right. And no blue band.
Yeah, so I'll put that motion forward.
Do I have a second?
Madam I'll Chair, second. Reverend Kenny, I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Roll call.
Excuse me. Mayor Waller?
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill?
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran?
Yes.
Reverend Kenny?
Yes.
Mr. Atkins?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We appreciate your time.
Have a good night.
Take care.
Good night, Paul.
Good night.
Item number 12. 23PB26/27 River Road Estates LLC. Mr. Arch.
Yes, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, esteemed members of the board and board professionals. I am Tim Arch. I'm an attorney licensed in the state of New Jersey. I'm here representing River Road Estates LLC. We're here tonight with seeking preliminary and final subdivision approval for a property located at 857 Hose Lane West. This is, as I mentioned, in a redevelopment area, so there is a redevelopment plan that is in place. We are proposing to subdivide the existing approximately 8.7 acre property into 16 lots to accommodate 14 new single family homes and associated site improvements. We are conforming to that redevelopment plan with the exception of two minor deviations, one of which is for front yard setback. 40 feet is required, and you'll see that on one of the proposed lots, we are seeking 30 foot for one of those homes. But you'll see that it's really just that one sort of section or one side of where that that home is proposed to be situated. And it's really as a result of a curvature in the roadway. So I think you'll find that that it'll still appear to be in line with all the other proposed homes in the area. And the other that we're seeking is for fencing. The code has a 6 foot maximum height allowed. And while all the fences that we're proposing are no higher than that 6 feet, because of the topology of the site, there are some walls as well, where there are some areas where the fence is on top of the walls. And so if you take that in its entirety, it is over 6 feet. And I think that affects, I believe, four of the proposed lots to varying degrees. Apart from that, we are compliant with the redevelopment plan. We do have several reports. We have Mr. Hinterstein's report. We have a CME letter. We have Ms. Corcoran's zoning letter. Just at the outset, I would like to say that we can comply with all of the comments in those reports, and that we are more than happy to work with the township professionals if we are approved into post-approval compliance to address any concerns or any issues that they might have that they might bring up. So we can certainly do that. We do have a couple exhibits. I'll mention them just right. The only ones that need marking, I believe we have a colorized existing conditions exhibit, which would be marked as A1. A2 would be a colorized overall site plan. And then A3 will be a colorized rendering of a conceptual home. One thing I do want to note before we get into our testimony, and this wasn't contained in any of the reports, but it's something that I know that Piscataway is always concerned about single family homes being sort of misused as multifamily rental properties. And what we're showing tonight are some conceptual homes that have some of them may have full basements that could legally accommodate bedrooms. So I want to make it clear and sort of offer as a condition that we will agree not to have multiple bedrooms in any of the basements and not to have any second kitchens located in any basements. And then we're happy to also provide that by way of a deed restriction to let any future owners know that that it's not to be used as a multifamily. It's just a single family establishment. So I know that's something that Piscataway is always sort of has an eye towards when it comes to single family homes. So I do have three witnesses tonight. Our first witness is Eric Ballou. He's our civil engineer. He's going to take us basically through the proposed site plan and touch upon those deviations that I spoke about. We then have Chris Zimchek. He's our architect. He's going to take us through some of the conceptual architectural plans that we have. Again, I want to stress that These are conceptual plans, so we don't know exactly what the homes are going to look like. We want every individual owner to be able to sort of customize them, but this is going to be a good representation of what we want to bring in terms of those homes. And then finally, we have John McDonough. He's our professional planner, and he will do what professional planners do, which is provide the analysis under the MLUL as to the justifications for our deviations. So unless there's any questions of me before I call my witnesses, I think I'm ready to proceed.
I think you may proceed, Mr. Orange.
Okay. First witness I would call is Mr. Eric Ballou.
Mr. Ballou, are you present?
I am.
Could you raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
I do.
Your name and address, please.
Eric Ballou, the address is 1955 Route 34 in Wall, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Mr. Ballou, if you can just briefly take us through your credentials and let us know if you've ever been in front of the boards in Piscataway before.
Definitely. I've been practicing for over 27 years now. I've been qualified for numerous boards across the state. In Piscataway, it was interesting seeing one of the exhibits there. We did the warehouses on Access Road in Piscataway back in like 2015. And we're also presently working for this applicant for the residential project on 37 Old New Brunswick Road. So I've been doing projects approximately 8 years in Piscataway.
Thank you. He's accepted.
Thank you. Mr. Ballou, if you can. I'm going to pretty much give you the run of the of your presentation and ask you to just go through the site and let us know what we're proposing.
All right, excellent. Can everyone see the screen of the existing conditions exhibit?
Mm-hmm.
All right, excellent. So this is exhibit A1. It's an existing conditions exhibit, which is really a 2023 aerial image with the yellow outline being of the property. So you can see we're located at the intersection of Old Lanes West and River Road, which is also Middlesex County Route 514. We have about 445 feet of frontage along River Road and about 306 feet of frontage along Hose Lanes West. And then we have quite a bit of an irregular shape to this property. The overall property consists of about 8.7 acres. And along this property, we actually do have some wetlands along the eastern side, as well as a stream that's there and an associated riparian buffer along that edge. And then along the northern edge, we also have a little bit of riparian buffer as well, based upon NJDEP permits and approvals that have been obtained for this property. One thing I want to talk about that's sort of unique about this property is there's a significant amount of topographic changes. The site slopes down from Hose Lane West to the intersection of River Road by about 6 feet. So there's about 6 feet of drop in this orient direction. Then it drops another 14 feet on River Road from one end of the property to the other. When you look on site, some of the elevations from the high point near the middle to where the stream is, that drops off almost 24 feet. So there is a lot of topographical changes, and that'll sort of come into an understanding when we talk about fences and wall heights and things of that nature. This project is within the 857 Hose Lane West redevelopment plan, where single family homes are a permitted use. So now I'm going to advance to exhibit A2, and this exhibit is the same aerial image that you saw in the previous existing conditions exhibit, but now we've superimposed and colored the proposed subdivision to give you an understanding of what we're actually proposing as part of this project. So as I said before, we're proposing a total of 16 lots within the subdivision. 14 of those lots will be utilized for single family homes, as you can see the various boxes. And then two of the lots will actually be for stormwater management basins to address those needs. We're proposing a 50-foot wide right-of-way. We call it Road A for right now. So we have a roadway that goes through the site that terminates at a cul-de-sac. So in a sense, we have a dead end street system for this project. This roadway, you know, it's a 50-foot right of way, provides 30 feet of pavement. We also have sidewalks on all sides, on both sides of the roadway. So there's plenty of walking and pedestrian paths being proposed as part of this project. Of the 14 lots, all of them meet all of the bulk requirements, such as the minimum square footage, which is 17,500 square feet, all the lot widths and lot depths, which is a minimum of 100 feet in both directions. So we meet all of the bulk requirements for the actual lots themselves. It was talked about one of the deviations that we're requesting for is for a front setback from one of the lots. So on lot 22.22, the proposed lot number, what's being proposed here is a 30-foot setback on one edge, and it actually gets even greater when you look at the opposite side. It actually varies from 30 to 47 feet. And the reason why we're requesting that relief is that behind this irregular type property, we have the riparian zones and the wetland areas at the eastern side of this project. So to provide a usable rear yard for this unit, we are asking for a little bit of a deviation relief at this corner to allow a 30-foot setback. Besides that, all of the lots will meet the setback requirements and coverage requirements as well. Parking. So each one of these units requires, some of these can be up to 6-bedroom homes or so, that requires approximately 3 spaces per unit in accordance with the RSIS standards. What we're proposing is a combination of some have 2-car garages, some are up to 3-car garages, and all of them also have a minimum of a 20-foot wide by 18-foot deep space in front of their garages. For we will be providing what RSIS considers 2 in a garage, 2 in the driveway. They give you credit for 3.5 spaces where 3 is required. So we meet the parking requirements for the single family homes in accordance with the residential site improvement standards. The redevelopment standards also have garage criteria as well. They say you need to have a minimum of a 2-car garage and a maximum of a 3-car garage. And all of the proposed buildings will meet that requirement as well. In regards to lighting, we will light the roadway and the associated adjacent walkways with decorative lighting to make sure that it's a safe roadway and safe walkways. And then as far as landscaping, in regards to that term, we've really focused on River Road, placing a lot of vegetation, a combination of deciduous evergreen trees and shrubs to really buffer the county roadway from the rear of the homes. Also, you can see the basins also too. These are bioretention basins. So there are grass bottom basins with plantings inside of them. So we do have a variety of landscape being proposed for the project, as well as the common street trees that are typical with a streetscape in Piscataway. To supplement the landscaping, we also have fencing. So we have a 6-foot board on board fence along River Road that goes for the entire distance, and then it converts to a 4-foot high board-on-board fencing sort of along the backs of the properties on the eastern side. Fencing is where we're asking for deviations, and it's really coming down to really the topographic change that we had to address for this project. So within this lot 22.21, we have that 6-foot board-on-board fence within the front yard area where 4-foot is allowed, but we have a 6-foot board-on-board fence per the redevelopment plan on top of a 16.51-foot wall. So we have a total distance of 22.51 feet when you add the wall combined with the fence, as was noted in the zoning review. And then in regards to the walls on 22.22, where we have walls along the back to make up the grade difference, how it drops off so severely in this area, we have a 4-foot fence on this property combined with a 10.71-foot wall that's along the back of the property. And that's about a total of 14.72. We go to the next lot. These are all very similar situations. We have a 4-foot fence on top of an 8-foot wall for a combined distance of 12 feet. And then 22-24, we have the 4-foot fence, 7.5-foot wall. So it's about 11.5 feet. These is the areas where we're asking for deviations on the fencing. You know, as you can see in this photo, this really shows all the natural vegetation that we're remaining in place and remaining undisturbed. And that gives you almost like a 75-foot buffer between where these fences are being proposed in the walls compared to the property line of the lots that abut us to mitigate any impacts that may be there. Even on the river road aspects, we have the walls. We also have vegetation inside of the basin, sort of screening out some of that wall and mitigating some of those visual impacts as well. So we feel like, based upon what we've done by preserving existing vegetation plus supplemental vegetation, we're mitigating the impacts of these increase in wall heights. Stormwater management. So we are reducing stormwater rates. We're required to be 50-75% of the pre-development rates once this development is constructed. So to do that, we're utilizing two bioretentions. So we have a bioretention basin on 22-28, and then we also have a bioretention basin on lots 22-21. So these basins basically, you know, treat the water for water quality from all the pavement surfaces, and then they also retain the water, slow it down to decrease the runoff. These basins will connect up to the river road, the county storm sewer collection system, where then it's going to be conveyed to a culvert that goes across river road. So we're maintaining the same drainage patterns, just reducing it with basins. Sanitary sewer, you know, these will all be, they all have sanitary sewer, no septic systems. We're able to connect for an existing sanitary sewer line from Hose Lane West throughout the development to service them. There's also water mains, existing water mains within Hose Lanes West as well. So we'll be able to provide water service by extending a main through there and providing the hydrants and things of that nature for public protection. That's my the direct testimony that I had outlined to give an overview of the entire project. Tim, what else?
Thanks, Eric. So just to turn to the staff reports, I don't want to go through them point by point, but just in general, you agree any of the comments that we've received in the staff reports that we can comply with those comments. Is that correct?
Based on my experience over two completed projects, yes, we can definitely work out everything and get it addressed.
Okay. And we're more than happy to deal with the township professionals if we are approved as part of post compliance to address any issues that they might have in part of post compliance. Is that correct as well?
That's correct. One thing I guess on one of the letters, I guess, to address, there was a comment in regards to potential environmental or contamination type issues within the CMU letter.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Eric, on the two letters. I think there were two questions for you that required a little bit of testimony or commentary. The first one is environmental. So if you can ask that or address that first.
So the applicant did have a phase one report to review environmental issues. That report did not highlight any issues of concern from an environmental standpoint. As with all properties, if we were to uncover something that had that required any kind of environmental type of cleanup or work, then the applicant would retain an LSRP as necessary in the state to address anything. But right now, there's nothing that we know that we have to deal with or anticipate.
Thanks. And Eric, I believe the other question that came up was about those stormwater basins and sort of the management of those basins. Do you know what the plan is to ensure that the management is done?
Yeah, so those two basins, there would be a homeowners association established for these 14 single family homes, and they would be the responsible party to maintain and take care of these basins.
And we're going to be, and we have a operations manual that outlines all the maintenance on that. Is that correct?
Correct. We submitted the stormwater maintenance manual, and then that manual is actually recorded with the county as a formal obligation and a restriction and obligation for this property ultimately.
Thank you, Eric. I don't think I have any other direct questions, so I would give him over to the board.
Any questions of this witness from the members of the board?
Madam Chair, I have three questions.
Yes, Mayor. Proceed.
You mentioned about the decorative lighting. What is that going to look like?
Basically, I have, let's see if I can pull it out. So it's it is a PC&G fixture.
I mean, it's 14 consistent lighting that we have in town is in black, and it has a Piscataway logo on it.
Okay, so this lighting is black poles, black aluminum metal poles. Hmm. I don't believe we have right now the Piscataway logo in it yet.
Well, if I can make a mention, Mr. Hinterstein has the contacts with that. I mean, they're all up and down the multi-use path on Route 18 and in our government complex and around of our community center. So you can easily get the specs for that. And that, those are actually PSE&G lights.
We would agree to that.
Okay. Definitely. Now the second question, and this is one more geared towards Mr. Arch. I know there's going to be a deed restriction with the homeowners association dealing with the stormwater detentions, but in all these years of being involved in government, when it gets down to the closing time of buying the unit, buying the properties out there, nobody really reads the fine print. You need to have it up front that they're going to be in charge of maintaining that, because a lot of them have a tendency, again, the new homeowners get shocked that they're having the homeowners are supposed to maintain it.
We certainly understand that, and again, we are happy to provide that the homeowners association is going to maintain that. And we're not going to hide that from any of the purchasers. We will be upfront with that, as well as any of the conditions of the deed restriction that I spoke about in my initially as to the basement bedrooms and the second kitchen. We will.
And the only reason I'm bringing that up is because they haven't the homeowners associations have a tendency to come running to the public works department asking for them to maintain it. So I just want to make that crystal clear up front. The second one is the maintenance of the lights, the PSE&G. I think we need to speak further with Mr. Hinterstein on this, the lighting on that. I mean, that could be part of the approval with the developer's agreement in the future on that, okay?
I certainly, again, we have no issue working with the township professionals in whatever capacity that ends up being. So,
okay. And then the last question I have is, I think Ms. Corcoran contacted about the fiber optic cable runs.
I'll note it is in the revised report that we got. We are agreeing to comply with all the comments in Mr. Hinterstein's report. But just for the record, we are providing conduit on both the newly proposed road as well as both frontages of River Road and Hose Lane West. So that was noted.
Okay. That's all the questions I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other members of the board wish to ask any questions?
Madam Chair, it's Councilwoman Cahill.
Mm-hmm.
This is a township road, correct? Not a private road, or is it a private road?
That's correct. This is proposed. This would be constructed by the applicant and then dedicated to Piscataway within a public right of way.
Okay. The other, and I may have more than that. The other question I have, Mr. Arch, is I understand that. You know, they're looking for the relief on the fencing for the, I guess, the two lots that are on the southernmost, or the three, I guess, here on the southernmost part of the plan. But the lots actually go deeper. Is that what those white check marks are showing? Is that the property owner would actually be paying taxes on a larger piece, but where we are suggesting here that the existing vegetation is not being touched in the development of these pieces. Is that accurate?
So yes, I think Eric can speak to that. Yes.
Yeah, so these lots along the back here are actually, in a sense, are oversized. Like, we're required to have like 17,500 square feet of minimum lot size, where this lot, like 2222, I believe, is almost 22,000 square feet. So even though these lots are larger in size, their usable area is a little bit condensed. So that's why we're asking for some of the relief there on the setback of this one lot.
And Eric, just if I can ask, to Ms. Cahill's question, the lot actually goes all the way back to where that yellow line delineation is. But the reason that the homeowner can't develop that area is because that's the wetlands of the riparian area. Is that
okay?
Correct?
So that is the wetlands area.
Correct.
So that, the riparian, technically, for the record, it's the 50-foot riparian buffer from the stream.
Okay. Going back to now the northeast property there, 22.29, it's kind of like a weird sort of very long driveway between those two properties. I guess that's just the only way that could be situated.
Yeah, it's a flat, in a sense, a flag lot where it has a long driveway to the back. And the way the redevelopment code was written, it does allow this as a permitted option to do flag lots. So that the way the configuration of the site worked out, that worked out to be a flag light lot type of development.
Okay. And that's only a driveway. Okay.
Right.
We do have an issue with rental properties, as a matter of fact. We have a resident who's right across the street who had two, homes sell, and then, buyers immediately purchased the homes specifically to rent. And I know that, can't really tell people I guess you can tell them. But I'm really very, very concerned about that, Mr. Arch. Now, these homes these are brand new, very big homes. I would imagine that these are going to be people moving in who want to live in homes like this and not necessarily rent out. It's not.
Correct.
Okay. But is it only the fact that you're not putting a kitchen in the basement? I mean, are there any other remedies? Or anything else in a toolkit from a land use law, from stepping on the rights of people who own property and this, any other remedies we have to very much dissuade that sort of activity, or no?
What I had suggested, and what I believe is, which could be certainly a condition, is to record that in a deed restriction, so that those are recorded documents that are legal documents that the homeowner will be made aware of prior to purchasing and will have to abide by those, and that any violation of that can certainly be something. And of course, if it's a condition of an approval here, would be enforceable by the town. So the town would have the ability to have an enforcement mechanism for that.
Well, what does the applicant think about that? Because I'll be quite honest with you. I mean, living, we're a university town, and we have the same issues as any university town, right? With people renting out homes, but with new properties coming in, I'm not, stomping on anyone's right. I would like to have that recorded, because there is really no particular reason why we would want to have to, or a neighbor to have to experience, what some other neighbors who don't want to leave their home, probably want to retire and pass their home on to the next generation. But not all renters are bad. Most of those people over there are very nice people. But as what can happen in college kids, we'd like to try to avoid that as much as possible for our residents, especially given, obviously the amount of taxes that I would imagine the people buying this home are going to be paying on, you know, properties of this size, the housing, the size of the house. I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, a couple things that I can say for that is that there, I don't believe that you can put a restriction on a rental, on the ability for somebody to rent their home. But there is obviously restriction on multifamily use, on more than a single family use. So for example, if you were to rent the property, it would have to be rented as a single family rental. But really the mechanism that you can put in place is through that deed restriction is to make it so that it is not a conducive to, for example, having, you know, 12 Rutgers students renting this place, which would mean a restriction on, again, multiple basement bedrooms, second kitchens. And then my only other comment is I was a Rutgers student. If I could find, I couldn't imagine ever finding a place like this that would recommend to me.
Let me tell you, but things have changed, Mr. Arch, the way that youngsters, you, I mean, you know what the new dorms look like.
Yes, no, so, understood.
As you can imagine, you know, parents who are trying, who do more for their kids than, not saying my parents did a ton for me, but, you know, at the end of the day, I rented a little room in a house that had, you know, the carpets were disgusting, everything was gross. So I could imagine at some point down the line it happening. So what I would like to suggest then is that they that whatever we can do in terms of that deed recorded as that deed restriction, that we actually do as much as we are legally allowed to do to protect that neighborhood.
And we're perfectly open to that. And again, one thing that I just want to stress is that these are going to be marketed as premier homes. They're not going to be marketed in any way, shape, or form as a, you know, the only term I can think of is sort of a flop house for a bunch of Rutgers. It's not going to happen. So
listen, down the street, off River Road, there's actually a small billboard there, but there were big homes built in those lots too. And to my knowledge, they're all still, you know, single family homes. It's no rentals. I completely understand that. But in light of what is happening at a faster pace than it has in the, you know, previous history in our town and what we're seeing, and when, you know, code enforcement might be called out to homes and they're finding locks on doors and things of that nature. You know, I think it is incumbent upon us that where we can and as much as we can within the law is to try to dissuade and protect that from happening elsewhere. That's going to be my recommendation. And I believe it should be part of the approval.
Well, we are certainly agreeable to taking any reasonable steps to dissuade that sort of multifamily or what I'm going to call a misuse of a single family home. And that's certainly not something that we want to happen. And we will certainly, we're agreeable to take steps to dissuade that.
I think that's all my questions. Oh, you know what? One thing I probably don't even have to ask this. I'd imagine part of the approvals are you upgrading that the sidewalk there on the Hose Lane West? Are you doing any sidewalk improvements? Okay, I see, Mr. Ballou, you're shaking your head. Does that include sidewalk improvements on the county side of the road, on the county road, River Road?
Right now, we're showing full replacement of the sidewalk along Hose Lane. We don't show any replacement of the sidewalk or curbing on River Road.
Does this application need any county approvals, Mr. Arch?
It will, yes. And I imagine that, and obviously the placement of sidewalks and curbing there is going to be within the purview of the county. My understanding is that Middlesex County has been requiring sidewalks along all county frontages.
There's sidewalk there, so but it is in need of definitely in need of improvement. And I'm hoping at some point to that intersection there, the lighting will get, I mean, I don't know when it would happen because it was just not too long ago improved, but with the countdown lighting at the light there, I think anybody buying this property here is going to find themselves in good company with the people who jog down Hose Lane West, cross over to the park. And I am pushing for good improvement of that intersection there with even better sort of pedestrian enhancements to like the crosswalks, whatever they can do there. But that sidewalk there along River Road is definitely in need of improvements. And I'm going to guess that the applicant would be agreeable to that as well.
Gabrielle, I'm sorry. It's Dawn. That is in our staff report, the prior staff report. The one that you have is the latest one, but they had made some revisions to the plan, but we did cover it in the report.
Okay.
That awesome. Any damage or broken curb along River Road be replaced.
Okay.
Just so you know. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. And I think the only thing is I might've just learned something today. I guess River Road was at some time County Road 514 and then became 622. So that's something new for me.
Okay. Have we done, like, people? I have a question as to internal road A.
Yeah.
Internal road A is going to be utilized and then turned over to the township, I heard you say?
Correct.
That's correct. Correct.
So does the township then have responsibility for maintenance and snow yeah. removal and so forth at that point?
Yes.
Or will it be the homeowners association?
No, I think the road A maintenance and obligations would be similar to the adjacent roadways to here. That would be truly a Piscataway roadway.
Madam Chair, just as for the record, whenever that they build it to township standards, and then typically the town accepts the roadway once the engineering and the public works department signs off.
Then they're responsible for maintenance.
You know, as far as the plowing. But they're going to take care of the homeowners association is going to take care of the storm drains, stormwater drain system.
All right, members of the board, any other questions?
Yeah, one question I need to ask them, Madam Chair. On these homes, Mr. Hart, I guess it's you or Mr. Blue. Are they three-quarter basement, full basements, or on slabs?
Mm-hmm.
So I think our architect is going to testify next, and he might be able to answer that.
Okay.
But one of the things I do want to highlight is that these are, for the purposes of the subdivision application, these are going to be conceptual. So we do have a couple designs that we submitted to the township as sort of spec designs as to what we think the homes are going to look like. But obviously, each individual homeowner is going to have the ability to sort of customize or design the home to their liking. But some of the homes do have proposed walkout basements. Some of them do not. If the homeowner wants to have a finished basement versus an unfinished basement, those are all decisions that each individual homeowner can make.
Okay, that answers my question. And that's why you have the homeowners association. And okay, I got it. Okay.
I would like to open it up to the public for any questions that they may have of this witness.
Can you please unshare your screen?
Sorry about that.
Thank you. Members of the public, you have an opportunity to ask questions of this witness.
Okay.
Is anyone in the public?
Yes. The first one is Satish. Let me give them allow to talk. Hold on.
Okay.
All right. Satish has permission to speak.
Thanks. I'm a resident of Kroger.
Madam Chairwoman, is it your does the board usually swear in the witnesses?
Yes,
Mr. Well, we do get their name and address.
Okay. I'm Satish Gopalakrishnan. I live in 6 Kroger Lane, Piscataway.
Thank you.
What's your question, sir?
My question is maybe understanding. looking out from Kroger Lane, there's a huge drop off to where the new proposed property is expected to be built. So we talked about the topographical changes. So is the level of these houses going to be raised? To what height are these new houses going to come up to?
So Eric? the houses here, we're allowed up to 43 feet of a maximum building height for the three houses that would, in a sense, back up to the Kroger Lane rear yards, Kroger Road. So 43 feet are the home heights up to.
That's from the elevation, which is 20 feet down from where River Road, I mean, where Kroger Lane properties are. So that 43 is.
So the 43 feet is measured from the average grade around the structure is where the 43 foot dimension is from.
Eric, sorry. I guess the question that he's asking is do you know what the grade elevations would be in that area? I think that's what he's getting at.
Okay. So the retaining wall along there is around elevation 40. So the retaining wall is around elevation 40, where the low part of the stream, I think, was around, I think I said, let's see here, is around 24 range, and the wall is around 40.
Okay.
And then the houses are their walkout basements along that edge, and the houses would go up from there.
Right. And between the Kroger Lane properties and the houses which border that, you said there's about a 75-foot gap?
We're retaining about 75 foot of natural vegetation prior to where you get to the retaining wall. And then from there, the houses are set back even further from that. So the houses, the houses are over 110 feet from the property line, the rear of the houses.
Got it. Just last question. I know you had said about soil and those studies. Just looking out, we see a tremendous amount of wildlife in that area. Is there any study or anything conducted on the impact to wildlife which is in that area?
So, in a sense, yes. The project actually got wetlands approvals that delineated the wetlands through there, as well as they delineated the edge of the top of bank of that stream and established a 50-foot riparian buffer. So if there was things like threatened and endangered species and things of that nature, we'd have a much larger riparian buffer. So the DEP has agreed to these buffer widths based upon not having any threatened or endangered species within this area.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public would like to ask questions of this witness?
Yes, I have Vandana.
Hi.
Could you give us your name and your address and before posing your question?
Sure. My name is Vandana Masan. I'm a resident at 6 Kroger Lane, Piscataway, New Jersey.
I need to swear you in. Could you raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Can you see me?
Did you hear that, Ms. Vandana?
Yeah, I'm raising my hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you respond to the question? Do you swear to tell the truth?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Okay, proceed with your question, ma'am, please.
Okay. So, I'm
sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Your name is Vandana. Is that your first or last name for the record?
That's my first name.
Okay, what's your last name?
Masand. Masand.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. I have two questions. My first question is with respect to the storm retention pieces, which we talked about, will be homeowner association responsibility. Has there been a study done that for an 8-acre property where there's a considerable amount of vegetation and huge trees that just the two storm retentions will be enough to prevent any kind of water level going up or causing a a runoff on the river road?
So yes. So as part of our application, we have to submit what's called a stormwater management report. So what it does, it evaluates the pre-development conditions or the conditions that are out there today versus the post-development conditions with the street and the homes. And it, so we submit this to the engineers for their review to go through all of the calculations. So things like tree coverage and grass areas and things like that are incorporated in the pre-development analysis of runoff.
Okay. And do the public members have access to that report?
Mm-hmm. We do. So it's one of the submission documents. We submit plans, and one of the other things is a stormwater report submitted to the board and the professionals for review and comment.
Okay, thank you. My second question is with respect to the retaining wall and the fence on top that we talked about. So as noted from all of you, that there's a 24 feet drop from the beginning of the hose lane to where the retaining wall will be built, right? We have talked about the ownership of the storm retention, and it'll be a HOA who will maintain those. But who's going to maintain these retaining walls and the fence around it? Who is responsible to maintain that?
Good question. So the retaining walls and the fencing that are located on each individual property are the individual obligation of that homeowner. So he's responsible for the retaining wall as well as the fence above that retaining wall. Hmm.
So we are expecting the new buyers to maintain a 40 feet wall and the fence on top of that.
Oh, I'm sorry. So the fence, the wall is not, that was elevation 40, not a 40 foot in height. So the wall heights along that area, go through here, let's range from, let's say 7.5 to 11 foot high, the retaining walls.
So how are you raising the elevation in that case from 24 feet to be able to build that wall and all? Are you going to be regrading? You will be putting soil over there?
So what is, so there is such a large grade change. So where the stream is sort of at the lowest point. We have to stay a minimum of 50 foot away from that stream. So we're further up the bank. So we're not starting at 24. We're putting in the retaining walls. We're sort of further up the embankment in the that area. So that's why the walls range from, I said, like 7.5 to 11 feet of height there. So we're not building it adjacent to the stream. We're further up the hill when these are being built.
Okay. So my last question, I know you mentioned that the existing vegetation will be left, after the retaining wall where you are building it. Is there any way or survey you have done to see from a Kruger Lane backyard perspective, will we be able to see those retaining walls, or is there enough density of trees that we don't lose the privacy of our backyard?
So I did not do a study of that, but looking at the 75 foot of vegetation, and it's pretty dense vegetation along that rear area, I think that wall will have very minimal impact from your rear yard.
Okay. Thank you. Those were my questions.
Thank you. Any other members of the public would like to ask questions of this witness?
No one.
Thank you. Close to the public.
Thank you. Our next witness is Mr. Chris Zimchek. He's our architect. I believe he's there.
Mr. Zimchek, are you present?
Yes.
Could you raise your right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
I do.
Chris, if you can, please just briefly go over your credentials and let the board know if you've ever testified in front of this board or similar boards.
Sure. My name is Christopher Zimchek. I have a Bachelor's of Architecture from NJIT, New Jersey Institute of Technology, in 1988. I was licensed in the state of New Jersey in 1991, and I've been working for Appel Design Group since 1993. I have appeared in various boards around the state, never in front of this board. The closest in Middlesex is probably Edison, and most recently Woodbridge. Other than that, I've been in Livingston, Florham Park, Kenilworth, Summit. So we do a lot of work up north.
Thank you. He's acceptable.
Thank you. Chris, if you can, please just basically tell us what our conceptual homes are in a nutshell going to look like.
Okay. Can I screen share?
Sure.
You should be able to. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So the first thing I'd like to show you is this is Model A. This house was submitted, and I think we have to submit this as a exhibit.
Sorry to interrupt you, Chris. I don't see it. Does anybody? I don't know if anybody else.
No, I don't see it either.
Oh, you're not seeing my screen?
No, not yet.
There you go.
All right.
Okay.
I'm sorry. So we had a rendering made of this is Model A. This is the house that you have our floor plans and elevations. We just took one of the front elevations and did a color perspective rendering to just kind of indicate what kind of materials we're using, what kind of style the house was under. And so these are all very conventional houses, upscale. So we're going to have some nice materials. It is shingle roofs, asphalt shingle roofs. We're going to have some board and bat siding, some horizontal siding. There will be some accents of metal roofs, like at the porches. And there will be some cultured stone accents. So I think we have to make this, exhibit A3.
Correct.
I think we're up to A4.
This is A4.
No, I think this is a Mr. Keneally. I think I had identified this one in the beginning, so I believe
okay,
this.
Thank you.
So this is representative of one of the standard houses that we're doing, gable roofs. There will be no blue lines across the top of the roof. So I think they're all kind of
sitting here about it.
They're all very kind of nice looking houses. Now I'll take you to the drawings. These were the drawings that were submitted. So this is the front elevation of that house. Each model will probably have two different front elevations. So this front elevation is just another representation of what the house could look like, the same floor plan. So if it's built next to each other or across the street, we can give it a different look and still maintain the floor plan. So this house right now has very common features for a house of this size. This is a 3,879 square foot house. That's living space. So we'll have a living room, a dining room, a family room, a dinette, a kitchen, and a back room that will be either used as a guest room or an office with a bathroom. And this one particular house has a three-car garage. On the second floor, this particular house has four bedrooms and one primary suite. The primary suite will have standard features, walk-in closets, its own bathroom. And the other bedrooms will either get what we call princess suites, which are in-room suites with a bathroom, or they will have a hall bathroom where several bedrooms will share a bathroom. So this is a very typical house. We have some tough lots, so we were trying to keep the widths of these houses within 60 feet of width and 60 foot in depth. So that's what we designed into this house. Mm. Now, Since this was submitted, one of the comments in the staff reports was that there was a desire to see some other models, and I have brought with me two other models. I did not get them submitted 10 days before the meeting, so you do not have copies of these, but I'd like to show you those quickly as a representative of other models. This, should we say this is A4? Mm-hmm. This is Model B. We'll call this exhibit A4. Do you want this house has four drawings. Should we give each one a different exhibit number, or is this model one exhibit?
You can call them all A4.
Okay. So this model is representative of the two-car front entry. We have some lots that we cannot get side entry, so we have to do a front entry. And when we do that, we cannot have a three-car garage. We can only have a two-car garage. So that's what this model represents. Mm-hmm. Again, we have two different front looks on this house. And then I'll go to the floor plan. And here's our two-car garage from the front. We have a guest room, dining room, living room. There's a library, a family room, a dinette, and a kitchen. That's the first floor. And then on the second floor, this particular version has three bedrooms and then the primary suite on the right side here. This does not have four bedrooms upstairs. It has four bedrooms. One's a primary suite. It does not have five bedrooms up here. The next house I'd like to show you is, let's go. Nope, that's the wrong one. Model C. Okay, this, should we call this A5?
Yes.
This is Model C. Model C was specifically designed for the lot 22.22. This is the lot that was needs the variance for the front yard setback. So again, there's two optional front elevations on this. And this, I drew this one up and I show this one as a representation of a walkout basement. So from the back of a house, when the grade is dropping off, it exposes more of the basement wall. This is the type of elevation that you will see from the back of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Now this one, we have kind of shrunk the depth of the house and still maintain a three-car garage. But this is, you know, we try to get it as narrow front to back as possible and give them some kind of usable backyard. But this is the one that was planned for the variance lot. So on the first floor, living room, dining room, family room, a dinette, kitchen, and a study on the far left. On the second floor, we have three kids' bedrooms or small bedrooms, and then a primary suite on the left side with walk-in closets, sitting room, and a primary bathroom. That is all I have to show you today.
Thank you, Chris. Chris is available for any questions of the board.
Board members, do you have any questions for this witness?
I really just, Madam Chair, it's Councilwoman Cale, really just have a question. When the homes are being built, they're going before zoning, or will this approval here, or like as the homes are being built, what is the application process from there?
So, as long as they are conforming to the code and all the township standards and ordinances, they would not need to have any relief. If they did require any ordinance, or if the homeowner that was building it required a design change that would trigger a variance, it would obviously have to go back in front of a board. But the construction department through the permitting process will have an opportunity to review any of these through the building permit process.
Well, so Mr. Arch, just correct me if I'm wrong, because I think Mr. Blue had made a comment that made me uncertain as to how this development it goes, right? So the homes are going to be a standard plan that the new property homeowner and tweak somewhat to their liking, but if they're looking to go to add something either on the height of the house, side yard, setback, or whatever, they have to come before us? Or are these homeowners getting their own builders and developers too? It's one developer, correct?
Correct. It's one developer that's going to be developing this. And you're correct. If they wanted to change, for example, if they were insisting that they wanted to change the height or add some sort of addition that would go into a side yard setback or something along those lines, then they would have to file their own application prior to building their home to go in front of either the planning board or the zoning board, likely the zoning board in that case.
Okay. So these were preliminary plans of these homes. Are we going to see something that's more final, that's going to, fall within the ordinances, is I guess what I'm saying.
So when each individual homeowner meets to decide on the design of their home and to build their home, if they put in those building permits and the design of that home is not in conformance with the zoning code, then at that point, the zoning department would trigger that they would need to come in for variance relief.
Okay. So essentially the dimensions of these homes, the footprint, everything, even though this is preliminary and nothing sort of set in stone in terms of the facade and things of that nature, these homes or what the developer plans to build outside of a homeowner trying to deviate from that, all fall within township ordinance.
Correct. These are conceptual, just to show that it's possible to do this. This is what can be possibly built, and this is the that we're to ensure you that a home could be built there without necessarily having to come in for relief. But if there is, each individual home is going to be available for customization. Again, these are going to be sold as sort of an opportunity for somebody to build, their dream home, a premier high-end home. They're going to want to have a say over all of these design elements.
Right. And not because we have a say on this board, but just out of curiosity. So does that mean that the facades would not necessarily just be an option of two or three? And I'm only asking that just out of pure curiosity, to be honest with you, because, I'm used to seeing like developers where it's sort of the same looking home or slightly different facade. Does this mean that there is potential for more uniqueness with these homes or?
Absolutely. So this isn't a situation where here are the three models, you can choose model. Maybe choose granite countertops, one color or another.
Got it.
It's really going to be a customizable developer experience. So yeah, it's not going to be cookie cutter in any sense of the word.
Okay, and that's a good thing. Nice to hear that. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, can I just make one comment on this?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so Mr. Arch, basically, these are like, what you're looking for is box approvals. Yeah. Basically, Mr. Blue said, we'll comply with all the setbacks except for the 30-foot front yard setback and the fence height, correct?
Correct.
And I think sometimes confusions on box approvals is basically, you don't want to have to come, I just want to say in our letter, I have no objection to Mr. Blue's bulk charts, because I would hate you to come back because you specify you're going to be, just for instance, 35.7 feet on one side yard setback, but you actually still comply, but you're 38 feet. So I have, again, from my comment, I said it's partially satisfied in my comment letter, but I said I have no objection to the way Mr. Blue did that, because it simplifies it. Basically, you don't want to bifurcate this application. It's basically a subdivision application.
Right, it is a subdivision.
And you're saying you're going to comply except for A, B, and C.
Correct. So the point of a subdivision application, and this is common with subdivision applications, is we're the dimensions of the lots are really what is the what is being set here, and the ability to place a conforming home. And if we can anticipate that there may be a nonconformity because of the dimensions of the lot that we want to address through subdivision, it obviously makes sense to do that so that we don't have to necessarily come back. But this is no different than any other Any other vacant lot that a homeowner may want to put a single family home on. And if they choose to do something that is outside of the code, then they would have to come back in front of a board.
Exactly. And this is a much larger, a lot of the subdivisions we've had are only two lots. So those are a lot simple. This is 16 lots. There's a lot more moving parts on this one.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Should we open it up to the public now? If there's no more questions from the board.
Chris, do you mind stop sharing your screen, please? Thanks.
Thank you.
Members of the public, you have an opportunity to ask questions of this witness. Is anyone interested in having a question? Indicate by waving your little hand there.
Raise your hand. No one, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Close to the public.
Thank you. Our final witness tonight is going to be Mr. John McDonough. He's our professional planner, and I see his camera is on, and he is ready to begin.
Okay.
Mr. McDonough, can you raise your right hand? Do you swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Your name and address, please.
Sure. Hi there, everyone. My name is John McDonough, MC, capital D-O-N-O-U-G-H. My business address, 101 Gibraltar Drive, over in Parsippany, New Jersey.
John, I believe you've been in front of this board before, but if you can real briefly just go through your credentials and see if you can be accepted.
Sure thing. I am a licensed professional planner here in the state of New Jersey. That license is current. It's in good standing. I'm also certified on the national level as an AICP. I've been accepted in both capacities in front of this board, and I am also a licensed landscape architect, but that's not my capacity here this evening.
Thank you, Mr. McDonough. You're acceptable.
John, take it away.
Okay, so this is a pretty clean application from a subdivision standpoint. In fact, it is a clean subdivision. We're talking about a single tax lot now, as you heard through Eric's testimony, block 11901, lot 22.15. It's about 8.7 acres and is basically sitting there for the subdivision that's proposed before the board now. We are in the 857 Hose Lane West redevelopment area. It's a site that's been designated as an area in need of redevelopment, and it is sitting there fallow. It is good planning to put residential against residential, and that's exactly what our applicant is doing here. Again, from a pure subdivision standpoint, this application is clean. No relief being requested from the subdivision itself, per se, the platting of these lots. All fully complies with the ordinance requirements, including the lot area for every one of the lots, all of the 14 buildable lots and the two non-buildable lots, the detention basin lots. We're also looking at conformance in terms of the lot width, lot depth, and as you've heard, setbacks on all sides, but for that one lot, really that's related to the feasibility analysis that the applicant has put forth and as part of its obligation to show that this subdivision is developable as it is laid out and platted. Eric gave you the good, sound, technical reasons why that relief for that setback is justifiable. Again, these are representative homes. These are representative footprints. This may not be the ultimate build out, but it gives a sense, a depiction of what could materialize here. And clearly, as you saw through Chris's testimony just now, these are going to be million-dollar estate homes. The actual price is going to be well north of that $1 million. So these are high-quality, high-premium homes that are certainly going to add value and quality to the site, which in turn adds value and quality to the neighborhood at large. In terms of the justification for that one relief, that one setback relief related to lot 22.22, where we're looking at 30 feet for only a portion of the building, where 40 feet would be the minimum required. I think the board can certainly find that due to the presence of wetlands in the rear, the need for the cul-de-sac, the presence of the NJDEP flood hazard riparian buffer, all lend itself as appropriate in terms of hardship and in terms of a better planning alternative to locate that home a little closer to the front. This home is on a curve. We have a general repetitive pattern here of homes on each side of the cul-de-sac, but this lot is somewhat isolated from the others and is clearly not breaking up a pattern by virtue of the fact that it is on the outside of this curve here. So we think the relief can be granted under that balancing test where the benefits of the application as a whole would substantially outweigh any detriments. on the positive side, the project is going to deliver permitted use here, which explicitly serves the public good, necessary housing, according to the needs of all New Jersey residents. And this is a housing product that will certainly cater to the higher end. The project will advance the intent of the redevelopment plan to take this site and to revitalize it. As I said, it's going to add value and quality, certainly a positive aesthetic to the area with beautiful homes that are as shown on these illustrative plans. We know it is good planning to put dwellings and people proximate to parks, recreation, and entertainment. This is a great neighborhood that you have here. We know the amenities are there, including Johnson's Park right there, the Rutgers football stadium, the golf course. This is not far from the employment center down at Colgate that I just testified to not too long ago. So you have all of these great amenities converging right here, which renders this an excellent neighborhood in which to live. Interrelated to that relief for the front setback, we've also got the relief that Eric spoke about relative to the fence on top of the walls. We think there's a very practical planning benefit there as well, in that the fence height relief is sought for safety and fall protection on the top of those retaining walls. As you've heard, these are not going to be obtrusive structures. They're well buffered and mitigated from any visual impact on the surrounding neighborhood. With that said, we think all of the positives that I just gave you with respect to the front setback relief on that one lot would also carry forth for the setback for the fence height relief related to those four homes. All said, we think the project positives here substantially outweigh any negatives. Based on all of the testimony, all relief can be granted without creating any substantially detrimental impacts to the public or to the zone plan. As you've heard through Eric's testimony, through Chris's testimony as well, this project is going to flow, it's going to function and operate safely, efficiently, and comfortably. It's going to be a great place to live. We think the planning basis is there that for all of the statutory criteria to be met. On the positive side, this is going to advance multiple purposes of the land use law, especially purpose A, the promotion of the general welfare. Purpose E, to provide for appropriate population densities. Purpose G, to provide for a variety of land uses according to the needs of all New Jersey citizens. Purpose I, the promotion of a positive aesthetic. And purpose M, for efficient use of land. All said, again, a very good application here from a practical standpoint. It'll be nice to see this site revitalized and put to functional use. Most importantly, the statutory criteria for grant of all relief are met, and approval is warranted. And with that, Tim, I'll pause on direct.
I have no further questions of John. I would turn him over to the board to see if anybody has any questions.
Members of the board, you have any questions of this witness? Hearing no response, I'll open it up to the public. Members of the public, you have the opportunity to question this witness. You can do so by raising your hand on your computer.
No one, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Close to the public. Mr. Arch?
Thank you. That's all of our witnesses. I make it a policy not to sum up after John's testimony because there's no way I'll say it better. So that is our presentation.
Thank you.
Members of the board, heard the application. If you can either discuss it or someone can propose a motion.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure. I know the applicant said they're going to comply with the staff report, but however, I just want to make sure there's a couple little items I want to make sure if we have to get a developer's agreement to make sure they get over the finish line. But I don't see this holding up the application.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
Reverend Kenny, Madam Chair, I make a motion that this application be approved, that it goes forward, and that they comply with all the staff reports as was submitted forward.
We'll have a second.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any commentary, Ms. Cochran?
No, I would just, in addition to complying with the board professionals' reports, as the mayor stated, just a couple of things for the record, just that the applicant will agree to install the black PSE&G light poles with the township logos, homeowners associations responsible for the basins, and maintenance of the lights, and anything that can be done to possibly avoid this, you know, any of these homes turning into a multifamily use. But that's all I have.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Waller.
Laura, just for me, Madam Chair, I just want to say one thing. Years ago, when I first moved in, people were trying to take that land and turn it into like a rehabilitation sort of high density use area. And the people in my area fought that group. It's unfortunate that the university allowed the house to go into disrepair, because it absolutely would have been a beautiful home for the president, a great entree into the university. But this use is so much better than what could have been there. And so I just wanted to put that on the record, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, and I want to follow up with Councilwoman Cahill says, for the areas that all the homes in that area are in an R15 zone, this is an R17.5 zone, which is bigger lots than what are the lots that are out there surrounding this project. And it's a heck of a lot better than what could have happened. And this has been an ongoing battle for, well, at least 35 years on this site because of what transpired with the original owners and then the university. So I look forward to voting yes.
We appreciate your comments.
With that, we'll have the roll call, Ms. Buckley.
Mayor Waller.
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill.
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran.
Yes.
Reverend Kenny.
Yes.
Mr. Atkins.
Yes.
And Madam Chair.
Those of us who've been on the board a while realize that this is a very satisfactory outcome for that property, and I vote yes. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Arch. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Have a wonderful evening, everybody.
You too.
You too, Tim.
Thank you. We do have one more item, I believe, on our agenda. Item number 13, adoption of resolution for 857 Hose Lane West.
Madam Chair, Dawn Corcoran, you want me to bring us through that?
Excuse me?
I'll make a motion. I can
Would
do
you
it.
Please?
Carol's not here, of course.
Okay.
But I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the resolution for 857 Hose Lane West, application number 23PB2627. This is for a preliminary major subdivision.
I will second that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Waller.
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill.
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran.
Yes.
Reverend Kenny.
Yes.
Mr. Atkins.
Yes.
And Madam Chair.
Yes. And item number 14, we have all been received a copy of the Planning Board calendar for 2024. If there's no corrections, would someone make a motion to adopt that calendar for next year?
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion.
Reverend Kenny.
I'll second Reverend Kenny.
Thank you. Roll call.
Third, second.
Thank you. Mayor Waller.
Yes.
Councilwoman Cahill.
Yes.
Ms. Corcoran.
Yes.
Reverend Kenny.
Yes.
Mr. Atkins.
Yes.
And Madam Chair.
Yes. And with that,
Madam Chair, I just want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And
happy
to all
Thanksgiving,
of you.
Everyone.
Yeah.
For those who are attending the league, hope to see you there.
Okay. Stay safe, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you. Good night.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.